League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
People say I am the best boss.
You can find us on Twitter at SB Nation Radio and call in at 1-800-777-2907. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Remarkably, we were introduced as The Boss and the Gloss. We're trying to fill in for Rick Tittle, something that's almost impossible to do. It does take two of us.
And he got half girl in his absence.
Well, I know. He's thrilled about that. And that part of it's a total upgrade. Rick Tittle, I have never seen in person, but I have no doubt that you are far prettier than Rick Tittle.
And he's a Bay Area guy, so I'm a big fan.
Well, he calls his show and his commentary titillating sports, but that has nothing to do with today's show.
Let's not repeat that today with me in the room.
So no, that's another matter. That's Rick Tittle. Now, we usually do a show in the evenings. We're coming out into the light of day.
Yeah, they let us out.
Well, I know that you are ready for America, but the question is America ready for Carla Dawson?
That is the question. God bless them all. But it's the Christmas season, new present, time to unwrap, put a bow on it.
So we get to do this here on a daylight hour, and we get to do it on a Friday after a Thursday night football game that was pretty entertaining. Brock Osweiler came back from the dead. He actually looked pretty good.
Wow, that was surprising.
Are you now a believer?
No, I am not. I'm a believer of him as a great backup, but we're going to talk more about that, and I'll give you my feelings on Brock.
Okay. I love those words, great backup. It almost sounds like an oxymoron, but there are backups who are notable and do very well in this league.
Right, and there's a different mental preparation, so we'll get to that.
And then, unfortunately, it was another week when an NFL player was carted off the field, Brandon Williams taken off the field. He's had a spinal problem throughout his career, and then last night, it looks like the diagnosis is a concussion and not a spinal injury.
How weird that we're happy that it was a concussion diagnosis.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
That kind of says everything you need to know about the state of the NFL right now. So, yeah, seeing him laying on the ground for 10 minutes is just another jarring optic for NFL fans.
Yeah, bad optics this week, of course. The week prior, you had Ryan Shazier, the great linebacker for the Steelers, carted off the field. And then there have been other big hits and injuries during the course of this year. The totality of injuries this season seems particularly acute.
Oh, it's ridiculous. And forever burned in my mind is that image of Tom Savage twitching in the end zone. Whew, can't get that one out of my mind. It's burned.
All right, when we come back, we're going to break down last night's game, and we're going to look at the NFL more broadly, and including a look at what the NFL can do about the injuries and what it means for the season coming up. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Osweiler in the gun, now walks up, says something, backs in the shotgun. Snap clock at 7. Colts look like they're going to blitz formation. They don't. They rush 4. Osweiler steps up. He run forever. 15, 10, 5. Osweiler leaps into the end zone. Touchdown, Denver.
Who would have thought it?
Brock, I don't know Osweiler. What leaps is, but he leaped into the end zone.
Well, he is not a natural runner. He doesn't have
He's
a beautiful gait.
Yeah, it's pretty tough to leap,
I guess. He's no Roger Staubach.
No.
Thank you to Denver Radio for that.
That was
touchdown
great.
Run by the nimble one, Brock Osweiler. A longtime favorite of yours.
Yeah, no, darn.
Not so much.
You know, we're broadcasting from Houston.
Yes.
So when he was offered his, you know, $72 million deal, I was all in. I mean, I was Brock Levin.
He was going to be the savior for Houston Texans. The long-sought search for a quarterback was finally over. They'd found him in Brock.
They'd found him, and he came to us 5-2, came to Houston 5-2 as a starter in Denver when he replaced Peyton Manning, who was injured, in the year that Denver went on to win the Super Bowl. So I am thrilled. I'm thinking, this is it. This is our guy. And obviously, he did nothing but just continually lay eggs. But weirdly, his best game as a Texan happened in NRG Stadium against Indianapolis. It was an overtime game. And he was booed early on in the game, but really kicked it up. Didn't have an 18-yard run like he did last night. But somehow, Indy is his – it's his go-to team.
Well, I guess
so.
That's
how you can get a W.
I will say when he runs, it's like an ostrich or, you know, a long
– Or a baby giraffe.
A baby giraffe. You see those legs unfolding. He's so big, so tall, and gangly, really. But he did have flashes in Houston, then cast out to Cleveland, now back with Denver. And actually, this is a Broncos team who have been searching for a quarterback. I don't think anyone's going to make the conclusion that Brock is the future.
No, I don't. And where I really lost my love for Brock was not only how he laid eggs with Houston just over and over and over again, just could not take care of the ball, but when he got to Cleveland, which praise the Lord that the Browns took them off the Texans' hands, which opened the door for Deshaun Watson, but how he threw Bill O'Brien and the coaching staff under the bus in Texas. So that I didn't appreciate.
Well, he did blame them, saying he wasn't getting the technique coaching that he'd had in other places.
Exactly. But he got cut from the Browns.
Yes.
Let's just repeat that sentence. He got cut from the Browns. Yeah, they have had 28 quarterbacks in recent years, and he couldn't make the cut.
Well, the competition at quarterback was too stiff. Is that why?
And guess what? They're looking for number 29.
They're looking for another quarterback. Yeah, but that was an amazing trade from the Texans to the Browns, a unique trade because basically the Texans were giving up a draft pick for a team to take a player off their hands. I can't ever really remember that happening. That was a trade that happens only in a salary cap era, or
and only in a Brownsy sort of way.
Well, the Browns did it.
We were the recipient of that. But I'll tell you what I really realized about Brock Osweiler last night. Like, let's give him some props. Three touchdowns, passing touchdowns. That was amazing.
Yep.
I mean, I'm going to give him that.
And Chris Collinsworth liked him.
Yes, he did. Boy, yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll get on that later.
But he gushes sometimes on certain players.
He gushes. And then, you know, that usually ends the player going the other way. But actually, Brock listened to him last night, got some love from him. What this told me last night about Brock Osweiler, and I said this when he came to Houston, because I was so perplexed, as was Gary Kubiak and former tight end at Denver and Houston, Owen Daniels, just saying, we don't recognize Brock Osweiler in Houston as the guy we knew in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
He was not the starter in Denver. He was the stopgap for seven games while Peyton Manning was out and had a great 5-2 record and kept Denver afloat. That's all he had to do was be serviceable. Last night, he was not the named starter. Trevor Siemian went down with a shoulder injury. Brock had to come in. So I think what that says about Brock is that mentally, he is not ready for that starting role. That pressure, that I don't know if he's playing too tight or what it is, but he does not protect the ball well when he's in a starting role. Clearly, as a backup, hey, he did the job. He was great.
Well, again, it goes back to what do you need out of a backup in the NFL? No team really can expect your backup to carry a team when the starter goes. If a backup can come in and play 500 football for you till the starter returns,
sure,
that's probably a good backup. And Brock can probably play that role.
I think he can. You know, 5-2 record at Denver. You look at, we'll talk a little bit later in the show, but Brett Hundley being 3 out of 4, you know, 1 3 out of 4 for Green Bay. So that's a little over 500. That's a great backup stat. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to work.
Now, on the other side of the ball, the Colts had a scary injury last night. Taken off the field, Brandon Williams. Mm-hmm. He was, well, just another one of those devastating injuries. You hate to see a guy taken off on a golf cart. Ryan Shazier the week before.
Oh, boy.
Now, it looks like today the diagnosis is he has a concussion.
We're celebrating.
Yeah, we're celebrating
that.
How
weird is that?
Mm-hmm.
How weird is that? But, you know, Brandon Williams, he's a tight end at Oregon.
Yep.
And in 2011, he was not medically cleared to play. He had to leave the team because of a condition called spinal stenosis. I am so fascinated that he could not finish his college career, yet he can play in the NFL.
Well, obviously, he was cleared. They concluded that it healed just enough, I guess.
Just enough. An MRI showed that the spinal column had narrowed, which is supposedly an improvement. But wow, when you play, I love what Doug Baldwin, Seattle Seahawks, Doug Baldwin said, which is the NFL is not a contact sport. Ballroom dancing is a contact sport. The NFL is a collision sport.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think if you've got a spinal condition that you can't play in the Pac-12, you can't play at Oregon, yet you are medically cleared in the NFL where you are really, you could be facing a car wreck impact on every single play. I don't know. I'm scratching my head. I'm happy for him. I don't want things to be ruined for him, but That was scary last night.
Well, and there are two elements in play here. One, that teams took him, welcomed him in, and put him on the roster.
Several teams.
The other is that a player chose to play with that kind of a condition, presumably at great risk to his long-term health.
Well, you know, that you bring up a great point that, yes, he chose to play. We can't blame this all on the NFL, that's for sure. And I think really what we're seeing with so many injuries, so many concussions, and what we saw last week with Ryan Shazier of Pittsburgh and Tom Savage of the Texans, is just a reminder of how incredibly dangerous this game is, number one. And number two, how not only in the NFL, but teams, coaches, and the players themselves, they have to be more vigilant. They have to do a better job. I mean, come on.
Well, it was very interesting to me. Robert Kraft came out recently and said that he viewed the NFL as having got a little off track. I mean, they've been distracted on all these other things, Jerry Jones versus Roger Goodell, suspension term of Ezekiel Elliott, the national anthem thing. But it's time to return to the more important issue, which is player safety. Because if player safety isn't tantamount, there really is a – well, there's two problems. One is the product on the field goes down. Mm-hmm. The players are at risk. And, of course, there's bad PR. Can America rally around a sport that's become too violent? That Monday night game between the Bengals and the Steelers was not good optics for the NFL. So Kraft is right. I think he's to recast the focus back to player safety and the product on the field instead of all this other noise and the national anthem and such that's been the hot topic during the last, well, really most of this season. I think it's important.
No, you are absolutely right about that. And the heart of the issue, really, you know, we talk about, well, did the Texans violate the concussion policy? And the Texans and the Seahawks for a Week 10 hit on Russell Wilson that he went in, he missed one play and went in, is still being investigated by the NFL. And so what is everyone focusing on? Well, why are they still being investigated? This has been 5 or 6 weeks, and should the NFL be doing more? You know what the heart of the issue is? It's the credibility of the NFL's commitment to brain health and player safety. Like, not the legality, not the anthem, not the – these are people's lives. These are their brains. These are their heads. You know, I unfortunately watched Concussion over the Thanksgiving break, and obviously I love football. I love college football. I love NFL. I even love Friday Night Lights. I feel really guilty. My Catholic guilt is at an all-time high after seeing Concussion that I love football. And look at these people. Look what has happened to them. It's really tough for me to reconcile.
Well, I am no priest, but I do absolve you of your guilt.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know if I absolve the NFL. I mean, I think Goodell's got to do more for player safety.
Sure.
When I see Rob Gronkowski get suspended just one game for an egregious hit that led to a concussion, that's a problem. When you see the concussion protocol being treated very lightly and almost in a mockery with Russell Wilson, that's a problem. And so there's the guilt. I'll absolve you of yours.
No, I think you're right. I think it's the NFL concussion protocol. They're not trying to get better. They're saying, this is what we have in place. And, oh, gosh, look, it doesn't seem to be working. It's weird to note that I was watching the Texans game live, Texans 49ers game last week, saw the whole hit on Tom Savage, and was like, what is he doing? Is he trying to get someone's attention? It was the weirdest looking thing on the ground. Why me in my kitchen can I see that and know that that guy should not be coming in? And when he went back holding his mouth to try and keep from throwing up and nobody else saw that, that's weird. Something's got to give.
All right. When we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Brad Shammond. We're going to ask him about the Cowboys and whether they're poised for a playoff run. They've got one more game and then the return of Ezekiel Elliott. It will be Brad Sham talking Cowboys on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gow and Carla Dawson.
4th and 7, and Tress Way punts it away. Ryan Switzer on the back pedal takes it at the 17, up to the 25, right into the middle of the field. The 40, broke the tackle. Switzer to the 50. This might be the run for Switzer to the 20, to the 10. Ryan Switzer with a somersault into the end zone. 83-yard punt return for a touchdown, and there are no flags.
Ah, that makes those Cowboys fans happy. That's Ryan Switzer, their return guy for the touchdown. And joining us now on SB Nation Radio is the longtime columnist for the Cowboys, Brad Shammond. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Really appreciate your joining us. And the Cowboys are interesting again. it's sort of interesting to watch Dak Prescott. He started the year doing so well with Elliott, and then Elliott went away. It seemed like he hit a bit of a swoon, but he's looked good in recent weeks and maybe finding a rhythm in a post-Elliott backfield. What do you think?
Well, he's only got one more game post-Elliott.
Yep.
I think that whatever hiccups he encountered are not all his fault. They lost three games in a row. The first one, they had ridiculous pass protection problems, and the coaching staff, by its own admission, was slow to address them during the game.
Right.
And they had some protection issues and some other mistakes in the second one, and Philadelphia is just better than they are. And in the game against the Chargers on Thanksgiving, I just thought their defense really completely let them down. And I'm not sure the extent to which they tested downfield. And I think that that's something that has to happen. Some of that is on the quarterback, and some of it's on the people who are calling the plays. And I think that you have to, in the NFL today, you have to be able to get the ball down the field. And it looked on paper like last week they broke it wide open, but in fact it was 10-10 in the middle of the fourth quarter, and I don't think they had a play from scrimmage longer than 14 yards. And then they broke, well, they did have one in the second quarter that Bryant broke. It was a slant, and he outfought the defender and broke it. The Giants had a blitz on, so there was nobody back behind him to pick it up, and then they had a couple of others like that in the last half of the fourth quarter. So I think the statistics are a little misleading. I think it has not all to do with the absence of Elliott. And, you know, they've just got to play Sunday to keep themselves in the conversation.
Brad, this is Carla here. Welcome into the show. You mentioned Dez Bryant, who is the number one targeted receiver in the Dallas offense right now. In your opinion, is Dez past his prime? What do you think about him right now?
I think he's still an outstanding player, Carla. I think he's had an accumulation of leg injuries, which may have affected his explosiveness. He's healthy now, and he has been, I think, just about all of this year. I don't know how you can be a player who relies so much on power and explosiveness and have an accumulation of hamstring, knee, back, and ankle injuries and not have it affect you. And by the time a player gets to 8, 9, 10 years, then he's starting to have to refine his skills because some of them erode a little bit, and then you find ways to compensate for that. And I think that's where he is. I think he's still a very dangerous player. He had a touchdown against Washington that was a one of those jump balls in the end zone on a fade that used to be one of his trademarks. And for a while then, for a couple of years, he got different kinds of coverage. But I think right now he's still an extremely dangerous player. He's a really good player, and I don't know how many I've known over time who have worked harder at it or wanted to win more than he does.
We are talking to Brad Sham, the longtime voice of the Dallas Cowboys. Brad, I saw your article this week, and it is interesting to note how young the Cowboys secondary has become, having drafted Awuzie Lewis and Woods this year, second, third, and sixth round. They have Anthony Brown still young. Byron Jones is still young. It's an amazing turnover. Do you see that they have a solid foundation now in this group?
Well, I think they do, David. I think Byron would be the first to tell you he'd have liked to have played a little bit better, but I think he's in his third year, so next year they'll have to decide about using the fifth-year tender for a first-round pick. But he can do so many things, and he's a very talented guy. Anthony Brown was a big surprise to him last year in the sixth round, and he may have taken a little bit of a step back for part of the year this year, and expectations may have been raised a little. But one thing about it, when they benched him a couple of games ago from the starting lineup, still used him in the rotation, he responded almost immediately, had an interception against Washington. He plays with a chip on his shoulder, and he just may have needed to refocus a little bit. But they went into this year, as I pointed out in that column on the Cowboys website, they they said, okay, we've got to do something. They let two veteran cornerbacks go. That was a business decision.
Yep.
And they knew that they had Skandrick in his 10th year, and so they drafted two plus a safety, and Woods is the safety. Turns out he can play in the slot, and he didn't know he could, and they didn't know he could, so that's a bonus. But then all three of those guys, and they drafted another one who's on the practice squad, Marquez White from Florida State. They drafted him, I think, in the 6th round. And all four of those guys, actually, had hamstring injuries of various severity in training camp. They were fine going through OTAs, but I don't think these guys are – I don't think the players and the conditioning staff are allowed to be together enough because of the language in the CBA. And when you have a rookie – who has been training for not for football, but for timing and for the combine and for pro days and that kind of thing, they may be susceptible to some of these soft tissue injuries when they get into football activity, which they can only really do in camp. So they went into camp, these three guys, plus White, four guys. They all got hurt. They were all out various periods of time. Almost all of them missed essentially the greatest chunk of training camp and the greatest chunk of snaps in the preseason. You can't make that up. And for a rookie, you're thrown out there. Then they signed a guy, Nolan Carroll, who'd started for the Eagles, and he had a concussion in week two, and they released him in, I think, the 4th week. And all of a sudden, Jordan Lewis is thrown out there in week two, and he's basically not played all summer. And he struggled some, but he's shown some real skill. He showed what they saw when they drafted him. Awuzie, I think, is just beginning. Missed 6 games. And he's just beginning to be the player that they believed they were drafting, and he's played really well the last two, and Woods has been a contributor. So I think they're going to look completely different next year in terms of the effectiveness of these guys. And that doesn't mean they won't go out and get more corners, because you never have enough corners. But, yeah, I mean, I think that this was something that they had to do. You know, in the NFL, you're managing a salary cap. So they had a good player in Barry Church, a safety. They had a good player in Brandon Carr, good player in Mo Claiborne. Those guys were all, because of their veteran status, big numbers. And they decided that the way to go was to get younger. And the problem that you run into is when you draft guys who you plan on playing and they're injured, and you have not got the services of the guys who left, that's four from their secondary last year, that's pretty hard to replace. And I think for a great period of the season it showed. And maybe it's starting to coalesce a little bit. We may know a little bit more this week. The Raiders are a pretty good test.
We're talking to Brad Cheam, longtime radio voice of the Dallas Cowboys. So, Brad, they've got two guys who have really made big contributions to the defense, Anthony Hitchens and DeMarcus Lawrence, both of whom will be free agents. Are they going to be able to keep both? And if they only keep one, which one do you see staying?
Well, I'm unwilling to have a conversation about only keeping one, and I don't know why they can't keep both. How they're going to have to manage their money.
Yep.
But they can put a franchise tag on Lawrence. And, you know, you got David Irving, who's had a very productive year for them. He's got a concussion, might miss this game again, but they can exclusive rights him, and so they're going to have to decide how much money they want to spend on Hitchens. I hope they learned a lesson that with Barry Church, a really good player, team captain, stand-up guy, but he was an eighth-year guy. And so if you invest heavily in that guy, that in about 2 or 3 years, that might not be cost-effective. Hitchens is in his 4th year.
Yep.
And his chemistry with Sean Lee is phenomenal with the defensive staff. He's a leader in the locker room. So I think that they really need to be pretty serious about trying to find a way to sign Anthony Hitchens.
Okay, in 30 seconds, the Cowboys are a pretty young team, but they're not young at tight end. Is this the year they draft a replacement for Jason Witten?
Depends who's there. I don't think you reach for it.
Yep.
You know, they've got a couple of guys they like, but I think if there's a guy that they really, really like, then it would make sense to look at him.
And then, Brad, what about your prediction against Oakland? I'm a princess of darkness, so be careful with your answer.
Yeah, I am. What I've learned in 39 years of doing this, Carl, is that I predict that they're going to go out there and play the game, and it's going to be tough. And I've been in the black hole before.
Right.
Some of those guys have never seen it, and it's unique. It's something everyone should have an opportunity to experience. Raiders are good. I've been watching them on tape. I can't figure out why they're average.
Great stuff, Brad Cham. Thank you so much for joining us on the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Brad Cham with the Cowboys.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
And so, David Bowie.
And David Bowie.
I'll be darned.
Two David and a Carla.
Peace. That's right.
I'll tell you what, it's fun to talk to Brad Cham. He knows more about the Cowboys. He's there on the ground. I will say some observations about what he said. You know, on the defensive side of the ball, I think the Cowboys, if you look at them now, they're actually pretty young because they have revamped the entire secondary, as he noted. At linebacker, Jalen Smith has probably got some good days ahead of him. He's getting better every week.
Oh, I love seeing that.
And that long recovery, he's been so diligent in his rehab process.
Such a workhorse.
It's really great to see him start to make some plays.
Could have been a career-ending injury in the Fiesta Bowl at Notre Dame, but wow. I love that Dallas took a chance on him and that he is making them happy they did.
And then the defensive front is pretty young, too. I mean, you look at guys like DeMarcus Lawrence and David Irving and Will Taco Charlton if he emerges, Malik Collins. Their defensive front's pretty young. To me, the question on the offensive side of the ball that they've got to address is more speed at the receiving position, either in the tight end role, if you had a tight end who could really stretch the field down the middle, or to get a speedster who could stretch the field and open up sort of the mid-range passes to Dez where he becomes more effective. Because clearly Dez is not a guy who can get great separation downfield.
No, I think that's a great observation about Dez, but I also love seeing how positive Brad Cham was about Dez Bryant. And it's interesting to note that the just plethora of injuries that Dez has had, that it really does, coming back from all of those while he has been able to do that, really does end up affecting his explosiveness, which is the first step to getting separation from receivers.
Right.
From defenders, excuse me.
Yep.
But also, I think in the positive, so they've got one more game. Dallas has one more game without Ezekiel Elliott in Oakland, in the black hole. And Dallas has to be happy with what they're seeing from running back Alfred Morris, too. He's coming off the last two games, 127 yards and 62-yard games. That's great.
Yeah, he played well and has played well. And then Rod Smith, the brother of Jalen Smith, looked pretty impressive last week, too. You know, Morris is a free agent at the end of this year, and with Elliott coming back, it's not clear that they're going to have Morris next year. But if they so that's what makes Rod Smith interesting. Rod Smith could be the backup to Elliott. And, of course, you want to have at least two guys whom you can hand the ball to so that one guy doesn't have to carry the whole load.
No, that's very true. But it does look like in the last two games that Dallas has scored 30 points or more, that they have rediscovered their offense. So we will see what happens against a Raider team that we don't know who's going to show up one week to the next.
Well, they are your Raiders. And for full disclosure to those who don't know,
own it.
Carla Dawson loves the Raiders. She wears nothing but silver and black in her wardrobe.
And
I've never seen
it now.
She's got all black and silver on.
Yeah.
Every fabric of her body is covered with silver and black. So your Raiders.
That you can see.
Yes,
let's be clear.
I'm sure it's all silver and black.
Oh, yay, yay.
So you've been choosing games? Silver and black?
Yes.
I think.
I'm true to it, Gio.
Absolutely.
Always have a little Raider Nation on me.
So what happened to your Raiders?
You know, you mean against Kansas City or just overall this season?
I'm willing to say overall, but no, let's talk more recently.
Well, no, I will give you overall because there are several things going on in Oakland, but there's one overriding issue. And, you know, Jack Del Rio, my man friend, my man crush, I just got to put that out there.
Sure.
But they've got several issues. Number one would be Amari Cooper's case of the dropsies. I mean, this has been a brutal season for him. And I know he's got an ankle injury. He may not be going on Sunday.
But it's been hard to explain how that came. I mean, he was so good last year.
So good. So I'm not sure exactly what that is. You know, my second issue would be what I see with Derek Carr, who I'm a big Derek Carr fan. But he gets stage fright in big games. Mm. He, you know, we saw it last week with Kansas City. He is so talented. He is ready to put this team on his shoulder. And I don't know what happens in these big games, except for stage fright. And then the third question I have is, where is beast mode? You had a fantastic offense last year that would have probably gone a lot further in the playoffs with Derek Carr had he not broken his leg. You've taken that same offense and you've added Marshawn Lynch, and you're not using him.
There have been flashes where he's just looked incredible, like the old Marshawn Lynch, breaking tackles, stripping people away, making big runs, but it's not been consistent.
No. So I'm going to tell you who my number one blame is. So those are some issues that I see in Oakland.
Certainly.
And I'm going to have to put this on the shoulders of Jack Del Rio because he is the man in charge. He is not to blame for this, but he is the one that controls who is your offensive coordinator. And Todd Downing, the first year OC in Oakland, God bless you. You are the hot name. You are the one to get. But you are not putting this offense in a position to succeed. You're just mismanaging the unit. You know, you look at the Kansas City game. Downing was not able to maximize the incredible amount of talent that they have on hand in Oakland. Players didn't execute. I'm going to go ahead and say that as well. But he didn't exploit the weaknesses in Kansas City. They were without Marcus Peters after he threw the flag into the stands the week before. You don't have Marcus Peters, and you can't do more than you did against Kansas City. And those 15 points were scored in garbage time. Kansas City already had that game in hand. So I think he took away Oakland's strength from last year, which was their power running game. And I don't like what's going on. And I think the person I point the finger at is Todd Downing.
You're going at the OC. But do you think Jack Del Rio keeps his job?
I do think he keeps his job, yes. I think that, well, he got rid of Ken Norton Jr., the defensive coordinator, which I like Ken Norton, but it was time for him to go because things were changing in Oakland. It's time now for Todd Downing to go. And you look, Todd Downing had never been an OC. He had several different roles. You know, he was known for the development of Matthew Stafford in Detroit. But what's Matthew Stafford doing?
Right.
What's Detroit doing? I mean, Matthew Stafford puts up great numbers. It's not doing a whole lot to Detroit. So I just am not, he's not proven enough to take an Oakland team that has this much talent and plays in the market they do, and they're getting ready to move to Las Vegas, so you better start looking good. It's on Del Rio to move on from Todd Downing.
Well, and this comes from a Del Rio groupie, so this is not a good sign. If you have turned on him...
Well, I'm not turning on him. Let's be clear.
Okay, all right.
I just think he needs to... And you know, as a coach, it's got to be hard to rid your DC. You've cleaned that out with Ken Norton Jr., and then you're going to rid your OC. I mean, people are going to look at him and say, well, what about you?
Right.
So he's going to take, you know, some of that blame. So maybe it's a timing thing. I don't know how that all works. But I do think that Todd Downing is not the right guy. He's a young guy. He's got plenty of chance. This is not the team to be learning on.
Well, it is interesting because Del Rio, there will be questions about whether he should return. And if he does not return, that would be a team where a head coach, I think, would love to step in. I mean, you've got a lot of pieces on that team.
Oh, my gosh.
A great pass rusher in Mack. You've got the quarterback in Carr. This would be a really attractive job opportunity for a head coach, dare I say, John Gruden.
Oh gosh. I would love to have John Gruden leading Oakland.
You would.
Because look at this. So in 2016, before Todd Downing came, Oakland was sixth in total offense and seventh in points scored. This far into the Todd Downing era, they are 19th in total offense and 21st in points scored. That's a huge drop from the top 10 to the bottom quarter of the league. And believe it or not, Kansas City is statistically worse than Oakland. Mm. And look what happened last weekend.
Yep.
So, yes, Oakland has got the talent. So whoever – I mean, I hope Jack Del Rio doesn't lose his job. I mean, it's 1 year that's being mismanaged. And believe it or not, Oakland is still a bit in the hunt, depending on what happens this weekend. I think Dallas is much more in the hunt. But
it just doesn't feel like they're in the hunt.
It doesn't feel like it. But, you know, as a Raider fan, you never give up.
Okay.
Says Jimmy V. Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
All right. So keep hope alive for the Raiders. But I will say it's sort of interesting. There was a recent article that's come out, and the discussion was for the jobs where coaches are at risk, for the head coaching jobs, what would be the most attractive place to land? Obviously, if Del Rio goes, I think the Raiders would be a very attractive head coaching opportunity with the talent they have.
Just stop talking about that. I just love that, man.
Okay. We'll move on from the Raiders.
Okay. Thank you.
But the number one team listed as an attractive place to go if the coach were to get fired was if Bill O'Brien gets fired from the Texans, which is a possibility, the Texans would be a really attractive destination, would they not?
They would be a fantastic destination. I do think O'Brien does deserve another chance because when you look at what the Texans have done with what they don't have, I mean, the season's mailed in. There's nothing to be done. But if you are to step into that job as a head coach, you have Deshaun Watson, who is the real deal, and he is signed for the next 4 years. There is no issue with that contract, with anything about that. And the Texans just have so many pieces. And I think you're stepping into, with all, if they get healthy again, you're stepping into a defense ranked in the top five, and you're stepping into an offense that was averaging 35 points a game before Deshaun Watson went down. And you've got a quarterback that has a work ethic and is smart and has studied and is ready and who wants it.
Yeah. No, he's the real deal, and you'd step in with all of that he brings. Merciless will be back. J.J. Watt will be back. That defense will be great. I would walk into the Texans position very, very confident that I had pieces to succeed in short order.
Absolutely.
Now, on the other end of the spectrum, the Cleveland Browns, but here's why they're attractive. They got all these picks, right? They're going to have the number one pick.
They have six in the top 65 picks. They have six of them.
Okay, so that
10%
counts,
of the
right?
picks. Yeah, it does.
And a lot of salary cap room. They can go get some guys. They could turn themselves around in pretty short order.
But if I'm a quarterback, I'm saying, wow, you've drafted 28 of them already. I would be number 29 if I was in the draft right now. Wow.
Yeah, but I'm the new head coach. See, I'm not Hugh Jackson.
But that's true.
So I'm coming in. I don't know who I am yet. But I'm the guy who can look at this and say, I can take this quarterback I'm going to draft. Maybe it's Josh Rosen. Maybe it's Sam Darnold. By the way, we'll get to ask Lance Zierlein that next hour.
Wait.
Which is the first quarterback to come out? The Browns will get him. The Browns are going to take the best quarterback in the draft, unless somehow that quarterback pulls a John Elway and manipulates his way out of Cleveland. Which is entirely possible.
It is, and you can understand that. Do you think John Dorsey, the new GM that came from Kansas City, is he going to keep Hugh Jackson?
No. I see Jackson going. I just cannot believe
it. You mean that 1-27 record isn't good enough?
I just somehow think that's not going to work. And by the way, of course, I don't blame him entirely.
No, I don't either.
There have been a lot of bad pieces there. Quarterback is the biggest issue. But when they're building and looking ahead, when you think about bringing in a Josh Rosen or a Sam Darnold, when you think about the future and all those picks, who's going to take those picks from rookies to playing well, playing elite in the NFL? I don't think Hugh Jackson's your guy.
Yep, you could be right. You're not mentioning your buddy Baker Mayfield in that quarterback situation.
No, you know, I see Baker Mayfield as absolutely being a first-round pick, but I see him mid-first-round. I just can't see that he's the prototype, the way a Darnold is or Josh Rosen is. I mean, interestingly, we'll get a chance to visit with this on the quarterbacks coming out, but Mason Rudolph, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, and, of course, Darnold and Rosen, you've got there five guys who all might go in the first round. Mm-hmm. There are some really good options for the teams that need quarterback, and there are a lot of them out there. I mean, certainly it starts with Cleveland. I think Denver's going to need to look hard at the quarterback position again.
They really are. Poor Paxton Lynch.
And look at the Redskins. We don't know where Kirk Cousins is going to land. They may well be looking. You know, the 49ers have taken care of their needs. But the Browns, if I were a head coach with all that salary cap spend, I don't see it as a bad destination as long as I can get that quarterback at the top of the
pick. No, absolutely. But, you know, and they, their front office, that will help with the draft. And, you know, they're working on that. So that should, I mean, you've got six picks. That is unreal.
It's almost like the Browns had their own trust the process here, right? They tanked. They traded away stuff. They accumulated picks. They let Deshaun Watson go.
Which
is a bad move. You'd never do it again. But it enabled them to accumulate picks and build for the future.
You know that the Browns are the first team in NFL history to start consecutive seasons 0-13.
Ouch.
That is not a good stat to be the first on, right?
Tough stat.
It's tough. And in fairness, Myles Garrett, you know, they're number one pick overall. He was injured for a good part of the season to start it out. But, you know, 28 quarterbacks since 1999 is severe.
No, but he is one of the foundational pieces. You got to have a great pass rusher, and hopefully he'll be healthy next year. We shall see. But it's going to be fun to see what the Browns do. And we're going to get a chance next hour to talk to Lance Zierlein all about the draft. He is the expert. And when we come back, we will unpack a little bit more NFL. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So, hour one, you have showed that you can still bring it, even if it's a Friday.
I can still, and even if it's in the morning.
And you stayed up late last night watching Thursday Night Football.
I did. It was surprisingly a good game. Well, I thought I was going to have it on as background noise, and I ended up riveted by that game.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, people say the product Thursday night hasn't been very good, but last night it was pretty good.
It was good, and the Denver defense showing up 2 weeks in a row. They blanked the Jets last week, and then they take down Indy. Well, it's not, you know, like they're taking down powerhouses, but nonetheless, a win is a win.
Hey, a win is a win in the NFL. The one thing
it's hard to get him.
Yeah, the one thing I don't like about Thursday Night Football, I'm not a big fan of Chris Collinsworth. Mm-hmm. Once he starts going on a player, he just keeps repeating. He gets into what I call a gushing mode.
Right.
And I can remember over the years, there was one Sunday Night Football when he did it for RG3. There was another one he did it for OBJ. And last night, he even got on the Brock Osweiler bandwagon.
Well, do you remember he did that earlier in a game with Denver earlier this season? And as soon as he started loving all over Brock, Brock blew up.
Right.
Just in a bad way. It was like, you should learn to just not do it. It's that Murphy's Law thing.
Well, I would argue he shouldn't gush as much as he does sometimes on certain people.
I agree.
But then the second lesson is, if you are going to gush, don't gush on Brock. Is that the lesson to learn?
That's right. But I'll tell you who I do gush on. I gotta love me some John Gruden.
John Gruden.
I think he is, besides the fact that, yes, he's got the Raider connection that I am always tight with. But I tell friends of mine, especially girlfriends, who are like, okay, well, I don't understand football. Can you explain to me this? I said, watch a John Gruden called game. He is textbook. He does the best explanations. He gives great color. His voice is easy to listen to. He's hilarious. The haircut.
Okay, yeah. Well,
I just love him from top to bottom. He is awesome.
But
he's awesome.
You know, I think he's better to listen to than see because he makes those funny facial expressions.
Right.
When
I
he's
know.
Talking, his face
contorts.
When he does
the grinder, and yes,
it's sort
he's
of strange.
Very passionate. I mean, he is all in. Every fiber of his being is NFL, but he's, you know, a dedicated, wonderful husband and great dad, and he's just an all-around superstar. But he is an encyclopedia. I even hate to say that word because who uses those anymore? He is a Google for everything NFL. Strategy, teams, personnel, color, you name it, he's got it.
Well, I do think sometimes these guys look smarter in the booth than they do on the sidelines. And he obviously did well as a coach.
Yeah,
he's now looking very smart in the booth. Some say he'll return. We will return with hour number two in just a few. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.